Yo, 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 what up, what up, what up, man? It's your girl, V Henny, man. You already know the vibes. Welcome to The Artist Show, where we talk shit about music, entertainment, and the everyday struggles. And you know how we do, man. We always have a dope guest in the building. We have entrepreneur, music, marketing expert, a man of many hats. Y'all already know, man, we have the marketing sensation, man, Matei in the building. How we doing?
Henny, man, thank you for the intro. Doing good.
I don't have the budget, so hold up. You know, welcome to my home. You know,
thank
this
you.
Is the artistry. I just want to say thank you for taking the time being here. I know you're a busy man, so it means a lot. You know, just diving into who you are and just the things that we're gonna speak on. You know, so
for sure.
Before I dive into anything, yeah. I always do a toast. And basically, this is just saying congratulations on everything you're accomplishing.
Let's do it.
So this is to you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Proper Ooh. Way to do it.
Yep. I was drinking last night, so I'm a little...
Man, my grandpa, on that note, man, he makes, I guess, what's equivalent to moonshine here in the States.
Okay.
But whenever we drink at night, that's like a requirement to take for breakfast. That's painful right there. It's
I
like 70% alcohol.
I could imagine. But, speaking of which, right, because you're from, I learned that you came to the States.
Yeah.
At the age of 12.
Yep.
You're from, Eastern Europe?
Slovakia.
So, yeah, I was like, when I noticed that, I was just like... Wow. So how was that transition, like coming to the States and everything like that?
Definitely a culture shock. I didn't really speak English when I came here. I was like 11 turning 12. It was the summer of 95. And it was a culture shock from a standpoint that, at least in Slovakia, where I came from, if you were the smart kid in class, that was the cool way to be.
Okay.
Whereas coming here, that was opposite. So I took that real quick, you know, and it was more about the image, the friends, the clothes, and things like that. You know, so I adapted sort of quickly. The clothes was a problem because we didn't really have much when we came here. We were broke, so
gotcha.
It took some time until I was able to get my first job in eighth grade and things like that. But, you know, I got...
Your English is really well. Like, I know you came at a young age, but I'm sure you took a lot, you know, you just perfected it, you know, compared, I have a very heavy accent, you know, I come from the Bronx, but hearing you speak, you know, it's very well spoken.
Thank you. I definitely worked on it. It's funny, me and my fiance kind of talk about that, because some of my boys, like all my best friends, they're from like middle school days.
Okay.
You know, like pretty much my brothers, that's like my family here in the States. And I definitely used to get made fun of for the accent. I never thought it was as hard as they were saying, but it was, you know, the subconscious thing as a kid you have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right, let me work on this thing so, you know, at least can stop that aspect.
Because
I know some kids that came to States around the same age and maybe they didn't care as much about it or whatever, and they, you know, they have a little accent, you could tell.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. That's why I was just like, I'm impressed by that. So that's why, again, once I learned that you were, you know, you weren't from here, like the United States, you know, I was just like, damn, okay, he speaks very well. Like, so that's, shout out to you, you know, for making it your business to, you know, to just educate yourself in that way. You understand? And I think another dope thing that I learned is the fact of the entrepreneurship spirit you always had since high school.
Yeah.
You know, what was the motivation behind that?
I guess, it was the land of opportunity, right? The reason my dad came here similarly, you know, especially what I found out when I was in my early 20s that he shared with me, it was just to make a better life, because in Slovakia at the time in 95, it was a tricky time. It was, we weren't in the European Union yet, kind of like similar to what Ukraine's going through, unfortunately, but it was really corrupted. And in 89, when the wall fell, a lot of mafia tried to take over the previously government-owned businesses. So, you know, he shared with me later, when, like I said, when I was in my early 20s, that he sort of came because of that, because the job he could have potentially taken in 95 would have been exposing him to a risk to have to deal with the mafia, which he didn't want to do. But overall, it was just, there was really not a lot of opportunity around that time, 95, 96, especially to have your own business or to be able to live comfortably on the public level, because then the mafia would knock on the door and say, hey, you look like you're making a lot of money here. You may need some protection. You already know how that goes.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it was, it's cultural. You know what I mean? Like when you, I feel like when you come from a culture where a lot of things were taken away, like freedoms, I think it was just the whole country kind of felt that way. And anybody that could, they sort of left and, you know, made success for themselves in other countries, Western Europe, America, things like that.
Gotcha.
So I think it was part of that. And then, like I was saying earlier, when we came here, you know, my father got, he was an engineer, nuclear engineer. So he had a good job at an entry-level position, you know. So, okay. Like, I remember some of our furniture was given to us by his good friends that had, like, church community groups and things like that.
Okay.
So because it was more about image when I got to school and I couldn't afford some of the clothes and, you know, even though I asked my parents and they definitely provided anything that they could.
Yeah.
It was a thing like, man, I got to figure out how to.
So you either get hustle my own and motivate.
Yeah, like trading cards, you know.
Dope.
Selling donuts out of my first job in Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay.
So it was just figuring out a way how to get to the next level.
And I mean, obviously, that mindset took you to where you're at now,
yeah.
You know. Have you always been like this whole entrepreneur or like had you had moments where you, you know, you gave into the 9 to 5?
The last 9 to 5 I had was in Circuit City when I was 19 or 20 before they went bankrupt. While I was in college, you know, and it was actually it was more part time. It was like 30 hours a week.
Okay.
Max. But I remember that conversation with my dad because they sort of offered me to be a manager of like the computer division or whatever.
Okay.
For sales. And he was telling me, he's like, don't make that mistake. Like, don't work for that company. Like, you know, get your education. Even though I ended up dropping out of college, but I do not regret going for the 3 years that I did. But even at the time, I was always doing detailing on the side, like the selling CDs and the DVDs. It was always a side hustle that I have. So gotcha. I think the entrepreneurship was there since like middle school, really.
Because I can relate to it, I think that's super dope to have that mindset. Because I'm looking at your background and, you know, you went from like just, first of all, you have multiple companies that you're part of or you're CEO or part business owner, you know, things like that. But then understanding that you also have done real estate, you've done a lot, you tapped into a lot, you know. So knowing that you have this background and the motivation, the drive to just continue moving forward, I want to know. I know you mentioned in like certain conversations the passion of music, and I understand that. But what was the initial drive to be like, okay, I'm gonna really get into this music industry and I'm gonna tackle it?
Right. So I would say in middle school and high school when I, like, fell in love with hip-hop and got into music. In high school when I started selling CDs and I was the first kid with, like, the 1X burner and I was, you know, selling copies or whatever came out and that was my side hustle because I never wanted to, like, sell weed or anything like that. That's what my friends were doing, but I was not a citizen. And I remember my mom in the back of my head, like, don't do nothing stupid because you're going to get deported. So that always stuck with me. So I was like, all right, CDs, I mean, there's no... It's a gray area,
there's
right?
No, like, yeah.
So I started with that.
So wait,
and then,
CDs as in like mixtapes? Like
DMX, Rough Riders came out. Okay. And the next day I had 10 copies with the covers printed, everything, and taking orders. Or people would put orders in for mixtapes or for LimeWire. They're like, I want these 20 songs on the CD. Okay, I got you. That was the extra. That was $10 for the mixes.
Okay, yeah.
$5 just for a straight copy of whatever just came out at the time.
So you was making money.
Yeah. You know, so like $50, sometimes $70 a day.
Wow.
Depending, you know, as a kid. But it was long nights because 1X speed, if you're burning a 45-minute CD, that's how long it takes to burn it. So if I had to make 5-6 copies, I got home from school. My dad was like, you're hogging up the computer. We only have one. I'm trying to get on the internet. So I'm like, Dad, don't get on because you're going to interrupt. You're going to put an error into the CD. So, like, the whole night I'm making CDs a lot of times. But that was, like, so when I started printing the covers, I would put, you know, just, like, being a kid, executive producer Matei. And then I had my, like, own, like, little label tag. It was, like, Infamous Records 2000. I still got the CDs at the house. So I was like, man, one day I want to be a label owner. I was just infatuated with the entrepreneurship of like a lot of the rappers at the time, you know, like Jay-Z and, you know, Dre and all of them, they were able to just make side incomes, not just being musicians or producers, but their clothing lines and, you know, clubs and all of that. And I was just infatuated with that mentality and the ability to do that. So, but being in Howard County in Maryland, it's not really a music industry, right? It's about 15 minutes out from Baltimore. So when I got, you know, into high school and college, I just didn't really have anyone that could show me the path realistically, even though I was dabbling with some like DJ software and things like that. But the entrepreneurship spirit was there. I had really, you know, good friends that were also into it. So that's why we got into, like, real estate. Initially, you know, the detailing, I was detailing cars in 16 because I used to street race.
Okay.
So detail for a shop that was kind of like, you know, they would sell rims and detail cars and things like that. So I was passionate about that industry. So somehow out of that, you know, we were able to form real companies early in college. And not saying we were making a lot of money that we would be able to keep, but we were making revenue and learning a lot of lessons.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And the first company that ended up taking off was really Greenewit, which came after the market crashed. But that music thing was still in the back of my mind, especially in college when I was, like, I was putting people on to sell other CDs. Once I had an operation, I had five burners going, dropped the price of CDs, and I was just selling CDs in bulk or DVDs to people, right? But again, I couldn't really know how to make it legitimate at the time, but I had opportunities with my good friends, business partners, to make other things legitimate. So we started in that, and I told myself that whatever business helps me sort of take off, one day I will find a way back into that passion.
Okay.
So I would say around like late 20s, I was dating my ex-girlfriend who was a singer. So at first, you know, I had the money and the time to start dabbling in it. So okay. I just started with the production as like a hobbyist producer. You know, next thing you know, I'm spending thousands on equipment. Taught myself how to, you know, do the audio engineering part. I'm mixing and mastering. Matter of fact, I did a few songs for MMG, for Rocky Fresh, mix and mastered. My buddy that used to live with me, Lenny, goes by PT, dope rapper, producer. He produced some of the beats for that initiative. I did another song for Universal. Some of the projects never really, you know, saw the light of day, but it was cool to see that just through a few connections and, like, doing quality work, I was getting into it. So that's how it came about. Anyway, so the Greenewit days, that was the energy efficiency company. Money was good. I didn't have to spend as much time. You know, it wasn't no longer 60, 80-hour weeks focusing on that. So I started dabbling the music, investing behind some artists. But I was still didn't really know what, you know, how I was going to make in the music industry and just dabbling. It took me a long time to figure out that the DMV was not a music industry market.
I mean, now it's actually picking up. The DMV area.
It's a consumer market. There's always been talent there.
So much
talent. But it's not like you can't go to D.C. like you can go to New York and potentially run into, I don't know, Nas, Jay-Z, or somebody like, from Shea 45, or, you know what I'm saying, this executive at ASCAP. Because there's no, there's not even sub-label offices there. Like, there's no Sony office in Baltimore.
But is it picking up underground scene-wise?
I guess you could call it underground because there's a lot of talent and, you know, these artists and their teams are starting to figure out how to do a little bit of the marketing a little bit better, street teams and things like that. So, yeah, it's, you know, I feel like when you figure it out on the lower level, it's always going to be underground to a certain extent until you figure out how to take it to the next level.
I wasn't aware that you actually done production.
Yeah.
I thought, so what else? Production, marketing, what else, like, have you dabbled?
So production and mixing and, you know, mastering. And when I invested into artists, like you said, I was wearing all the hats. I was, like, hiring vocal coaches and learning about different, like, service offerings that the vocal coaches had and the importance of that. And then, you know, then I had to get into figuring out how to copyright the music and the ASCAP, the publishing.
Yeah.
And because I was already, you know, had other companies and we had a lot of advisors and good lawyers, I knew how we were structured there. So I was like, okay, well, what would a label really need to operate? Like, how do you split that up? Like, how do you protect yourself legally? And also the artists. And from the beginning, I saw that the industry was clearly taking advantage of a lot of artists from the label standpoint.
Yeah.
So even in 2013, when I first, like, incorporated my first company in the music industry, it's called Open Source Entertainment. Initially, I thought about this idea that one day I'll have a music incubator.
Okay.
Because business incubators in Maryland, being part of some of those programs and having those connections helped my company Greenewit really get to the next level. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with what a business incubator is.
I have an idea, but I know for those who are watching, what's more or less, what's an incubator?
So it's usually either universities or, like, what are those facilities called? Like, I forgot, like, where you rent an office for cheap, like you rent a desk for $200. Mm-hmm. But an incubator is actually essentially a facility like that. You pay low rent, so you get to focus on your business idea and you don't get sort of raped on all the different calls. But within that facility, if it's a true incubator, you'll get connections to the accountants and the lawyers to help you properly incorporate your company and different, you know, maybe insurance services or some connections to help you figure out how to raise money or, you know, produce your product on the bigger level or, you know, sell your service and things like that. So like a kid incubator when a child is prematurely born, it's that for a business.
Okay.
And there was nothing like that for the music industry. So open source came from the software world because also was always like the technical CTO partner of all my companies.
Okay.
And open source, like, you know, nobody wanted to pay for Microsoft Word and Office. So OpenWork came out, the free version of it, or like Google Docs, right? Gmail is free. It's open source.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I love that like community aspect of what the software world was doing, how they were able to create huge applications on the enterprise level.
Okay.
But with just getting really smart engineers together and releasing it for free to enable entrepreneurs to take advantage of that and get to the next level. So I was like, all right, open source entertainment. One day, hopefully I'll have a facility or a program where I'll be able to teach artists and their teams to take their business to the next level along with what I'm doing and taking my label to the next level. So that was like the early stage idea.
So where we're at now with...
So with that, when COVID hit, I wasn't able to do it on the physical level. And also being in the DMV area, I knew that if I was going to have a physical facility, it was going to have to be in like New York, Atlanta, or LA. So that didn't happen. But I just decided to sort of start it on the online level, and it became the Indie Arts Accelerator. Right, so I had my like curriculum the way I wanted to teach it, first teaching artists and producers about the industry, not diving right away into like the algorithms and how to market and all that, but like helping artists and producers understand that this is an industry that came from the 30s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a business. Why is it a business? Like, how does it compare to the Jordan sneaker company or McDonald's or like just business one-on-one, supply and demand?
Yeah.
So they first understand the concept of like, oh, okay, this is a business. And then we can get into specifics. Well, how do you market music as a product? Or how do you market your services as a music engineer?
Yeah.
Right? Because it's not much different as marketing or like a masseuse or a chiropractor, things like that. You have to find your market, understand who it is. So that was the first begin. It's like 101, 201, 301, 401, just like college.
Gotcha. Gotcha. You know? That's dope. That's super dope. So I'm sure because you went the online route, especially during COVID, I'm sure it picked up super fast.
Yeah, it did pretty deep. You know, we have anywhere between 200 to 300 members, depending on the month. We have live Q&As and the live classes. And what I'm super proud to sort of announce, and we've been kind of like talking about already, I partnered up with Clinton Sparks. So he had a similar group because he wrote a book. He's got a ton of experience in the industry, knows everybody. So he's kind of had a lighter version of what I was doing through Facebook groups and things like that. So we're combining those two groups together and partnering on the company to take it to the next level. And that should be coming out officially, hopefully May and June. We're going to be, you know, announcing it everywhere. But
nice.
So, you know, and it also took a while. Like, I tried to partner with a few other people to do that with, like, you know, key industry people. And we're not the only ones doing it, obviously. It's starting to catch on because I feel like the independent music industry is really booming.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, after social media and like streaming became powerful.
So let me ask you this, because obviously you educate a lot of artists and producers, right? And I work with a lot of artists. I want your opinion on this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that with everything you're educating the artists, like the creators on, do you feel like they're taking it in, like, in a sense where it's like they're doing it willingly, or like, is that, or like, are you seeing this with artists, with indie artists? Because like where I'm at, I sense, or I see a lot, not all, but I see a lot of artists just having this whole entitlement mindset where it's like they feel as if things need to be handed to them, and it's like.
Yeah.
So I want to know what's your input on this, because like, again, when I go to your Instagram, right, you're educating, you're teaching people, and it's like, dope. I love it, right? But I just feel like a lot of people they take it for granted.
They do.
So what's your intake on this, your opinion on this?
It's kind of what you said. It's a lot of that. I would say 85 to 90% have that, first of all, idea, A, of entitlement, but B, it's like, I'm the artist. I shouldn't be doing this.
Yes.
Even in the Exeter, like I said, we have 300 active members, but whenever I do the live Q&As, I do those twice a week, and then the live classes, only anywhere between 10 to 25, 30 max people show, which is 10% of the 300.
Wow.
That take it seriously, right? And I've been going through this for a long time, like working with so many talented artists where they just felt like everything was going to be done for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were picturing that what they were going to be is these A-list artists that have these large teams and budgets around them that, yes, at that point, you got to spend 90% of your time on figuring out how to make sure you continue to deliver hot music.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, your brand's going to, you know, start going downwards. So, but there's levels to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The comparison I like to give is like, if you're like a mom and pop cheesesteak spot somewhere in Brooklyn on the corner, you may be having the dopest food, like dopest cheesesteaks, healthier than McDonald's, whatever, but you can't do the type of marketing strategies that McDonald's does, an international franchise. You would go broke. There's just no way.
Okay.
You have to start, you know, locally, and that business owner, mm-hmm. that has a he's probably the accountant. He's probably the lawyer at times. He's probably, you know, the security guard at times. You know, he's just doing everything, and he's cooking,
mm-hmm.
right? And then if that's successful, and then they take that to the next level, now you got two cheesesteaks. You got one in Brooklyn, now you got one in Queens. Then you got another one in Jersey City. You have more revenue. You can hire other people to do the other stuff you had to do in the beginning. Now,
mm-hmm.
next thing you know, it's like, all right, maybe I'll franchise this thing. And you got 15 more across Jersey, New York, and maybe into Pennsylvania. It's really no different for an artist. And in 2022, I feel like everybody has the opportunity to grow their own, you know, label, because it's different. Now, of course, which I think is like buying a lottery ticket, but if a label signs an artist just truly based on the talent,
mm-hmm.
and they put all those resources around you,
mm-hmm.
okay, dope. Then that could happen. But that's like going to culinary school, being the chef, and you're pretty good, and then you get hired by, I don't know, TGI Fridays. It's probably not the best example, you know,
okay.
it's a national franchise, international, matter
mm-hmm.
of fact, right? And you don't have to worry about hiring the hostesses, the waitresses, and all that. Maybe you manage the kitchen and have to figure out how to create the recipes to keep the consumers coming back in, but all the business is taken care of for you.
Okay.
But if you wanted to build TGI Fridays from scratch, what do you think that would take? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and it was certainly different in the 90s, different in the 2000s, and I just feel like that these days, in 2020, you know, since 2015 and above, it's never been easier.
Mm-hmm.
to succeed independently, but it's also never been more saturated because anybody can do it.
Yeah.
But going back to your earlier question, yes, a lot of that is in there. And it's like, I'm trying to teach the artists to also shift their mindset and say, you know, y'all telling me you're creative and I love, you know, thing with the left side of the right. That's bullshit. That's a fucking excuse. Excuse
okay.
my language. But I'm a creative. I'm a producer. I paint.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told many times, oh, you're such a dope, you know, like drawer, artist, or you're such a dope, talented producer. Okay, great, but I still got to market the hell out of my production to do some out of
mm-hmm,
it
mm-hmm.
because talent is everywhere, you know? So not only am I teaching the exact step-by-step things you can do on the business level, marketing level, and, you know, management and organization level to get to the next place, but also the mindset is important because you're right, because if the artist doesn't have that mind shift,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be stuck in that hamster wheel, and maybe somebody will adopt them and develop them and all of that and put money around them.
That's
but
rare.
We hear those, right. It's super rare. And we hear those stories as
mm-hmm.
well when
mm-hmm.
that blows up on the artist, the negative way, like, oh, they took advantage of me and I lost millions and X, Y, and Z. But I mean, come on, you had some role to play in that. Like you
yeah.
could have been easily learned that business as you were getting your career taken to the next level to make sure you knew what your lawyers were doing.
Do you feel like because, although it's like the beauty and the ugly moments of social media, right? Like, the beauty to social media is how accessible it is, right,
yep.
for others. But then the ugly side to it is because how accessible it is to others, right?
Yep.
So I'm like, do you feel like, is that a reason why they feel like they have this sense of entitlement? Because they have the internet and it's like, I just feel like I could post it and that's it.
I think social media has a lot to do with it. Here's my opinion
okay.
on why a lot of them think this way. And it's different in other industries. It's because they're looking at the A-list artists.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at what the baby's doing. They're looking at what Taylor Swift is doing publicly in interviews and all that. And they think that's the blueprint to making it.
Okay.
But that's like, they're entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
That's like watching, Will Smith playing a lawyer on TV, an actor, and saying, "Oh, I could be that because he's doing it." Mm. Like you're looking at an actor, and every lawyer knows you're not going to watch a bunch of Matlock movies or whatever, and then now you're a lawyer. Like you got to go to law school, got to get that degree, you got to practice, you got to go through a bunch of cases. That some you're going to lose, some you're going to win, to become the dopest lawyer in your state. Like there's no other way to do it. Same thing for engineers. Like you're not just going to watch like MacGyver and then work for Lockheed Martin and work on rockets, right? And you got to go to school and all that. So not saying artists have to go to school, but it's like you got to learn the business.
You got to learn it. Yeah, it's I know you mentioned it. I'm constantly mentioning the fact of how like business, in this music industry, it's what, 90% business, 10% music in a sense, right? Yeah. I know you mentioned that as well. But I like, again, it's like learning that factor of it. So when you're saying educating, so going back to it, you're teaching them the marketing aspects of like just how to put themselves out there more, right? So what, like when it comes to the marketing, more or less, what's a good route for them to start with?
So digital marketing, if you know how to use it right, is the cheapest way out of any marketing strategy that I know of to figure out, first of all, if your product works. I don't care what you're selling. Mm-hmm. And then second of all, to get it in front of a surgically targeted audience.
Okay.
So if you think you sound like J. Cole, maybe Joey Badass, like conscious hip-hop rapper, mm-hmm. you can literally target all these big names on the internet, their fans. You can target their fans.
Okay.
So if you think your music is in a similar lane and you think your music will be appreciated by fans of these other artists that I just mentioned, mm-hmm. you can literally just target them on every platform pretty much.
Okay.
Right? And first two things are going to happen. Before you even have a brand, they're going to tell you straight up whether your music is good or not. Now, how you take it as an artist and you're too emotional about it, or you take it as a businessman and say, all right, they're telling me my cadence is off or my raps is off. Okay, let me fix that. Or mm-hmm. my beats are trash, whatever. You can, just like a business putting a beta version of their product out there and getting feedback from their consumer, like on the app, right? You put out an app. The app is cool in the beginning, but mm-hmm. people in the comments are like, oh, this shit broke. And now this update doesn't work and all of that. And if you're determined as an app developer to make a great product, you're going to listen to that feedback and fix it.
Yeah.
Artists have the same opportunity. And then second of all, like I said, if you saturate that market, then people will actually start turning on to you, and that's the most direct way of doing it.
Okay.
You know?
So, and I get that. So when you're doing that, when you're targeting, see, and I agree with you. I'm curious on this because I know I saw you posted something like on ads, right? And I get mixed reviews with that. Like, is it worth like doing, like getting, like investing in ads?
Absolutely. This is the problem about the music industry. And it's not like that in other industries. I just made a post about this, is that other marketing agencies also don't really, they're not like experts, not all of them, mm-hmm. but they know how to sell something because there's so many desperate artists. They understand they need it, but they have really no idea how to do it.
Okay.
So a lot of people get got, basically. And then these other marketers, they don't even use these other artists' ad accounts. They use theirs. They experiment many times. They target the cheap views. They go outside of the U.S. because it's cheap to get a bunch of views from India and all that. And then it's a horrible experience. The most common contractor I fired as an entrepreneur, you know, when you hire different companies to help you, is marketers, because they all suck until I just develop my own company. And it's because of that aspect. But in other industries, you're not going to get bamboozled as easily, because people understand that if you're going to be marketing, you have to market to your consumer where they're at, right? Mm-hmm. So even, and artists fall for this all the time, and then when I explain it to them, they're like, yeah, damn, that fucking makes sense. So if you're going to market a video on YouTube, and yes, you have a limited budget, but you want the views. Everybody wants the views. Uh-huh. So yes, if I target India and Asia and certain countries like Malaysia and all that, I could get views for super cheap.
Okay.
But is that really your consumer? The customer's going to, they're not going to fly over here and see you at a show. They're not going to buy your merch. They're going to do none of that. So you just got sort of slightly bamboozled because it doesn't work. Why not market to New York? Oh, because it's 10 times more. Oh, I can't do that. But like if you did physical marketing, if you were if you print out 3,000 flyers with QR codes on it, and you're going to start targeting people and hand these cards to them to say, check out my music, scan my code, listen to my Spotify music. Let's say you're a rapper. Mm-hmm. Are you going to go to a country concert?
I get what you're saying.
Or are you going to go to India? No. You're going to be in Brooklyn or Queens or wherever you're at, Baltimore, wherever you're from. So then they're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely worth it, but you have to understand how to utilize it. And I feel like the reason that a lot of artists get a bad taste in their mouth after they get scammed, because that's how I got scammed. I got scammed for at least $30,000, $40,000 by hiring companies like this.
Oh, wow.
Thinking, okay. I knew that market was important. I just didn't think they were going to get us fake views, fake comments, all this fake shit.
How long did it take you to learn this?
Right away when I hired these companies, like, you know, it was usually like $2,000 to $3,000 at a pop.
Okay.
They would deliver, and I would go on the back end and check. And I'm looking, I'm like, well, my artist is not getting DM'd. These comments are blatantly fake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the views, I look at the audiences, I see where the views are coming from. In these countries, I'm like, yeah, how am I going to take my artists? Funny enough, I have business partners in India, so I go to India every year. But that's how I know. Like, why would I take my artists to India where they don't even listen to music like that over there?
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not going to sell, nobody's going to buy a $20 t-shirt in India or Nigeria, because over there it's times 10. It's like you being an artist and nobody knows you and you're walking around the street selling hoodies, but you're like, here, buy my hoodie. How much? $400. Get the fuck out of here. Why would I, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Kanye can sell $400 jackets through Gap.
Yeah,
but you got Kanye and Gap, two biggest brands in the world. Now you can sell it for $400. You're not doing that, you know. So it's just, that's what I'm saying, is the business one-on-one. Like, does it even make sense to what you're, you know, to what you're doing? And if you hire somebody else and you're not understanding what they should be doing,
mm-hmm.
that's the easiest way to get scammed.
What would you consider, because you said this earlier, if you're a good product, or if you have a good product, what would you consider a good product?
So it is tricky in music because it's subjective.
Mm-hmm.
But I figure out how to objectify the results. I can literally grade songs and how they're perceived by the consumer. Okay. But, like, you know, I feel like I have an ear for music, but I even tell my clients all the time, like, hey, I'll give my opinion, but I'm just one guy.
Yeah.
I want you to get an opinion of 500 random users on the internet, not random, targeted, that mm-hmm. should be listening to your music. Let's see what they think.
Okay.
Right? So that's how you know. So, like, let's say I do a campaign. Let's say, you know, a rapper comes to me. They got a pretty dope song. And like I said, my team identifies that they sound similar to X, Y, and Z. First of all, we're going to create one targeting group and push their song, like a one-minute snippet video, to the fans that already interact with those brands that I named.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to push it just to the hip-hop, rap, like, genre mm-hmm. group. Then we may push it to New York City, and you got to like hip-hop, you know, so there's different groups we can play with. And then we just run the ads, and we're putting that ad in front of you, for example, and I'm sure if you've seen the ad of a dope artist and it really caught your attention, you may comment.
Yeah.
Or you may like it, or you may save it. And then I look at those metrics. How many saves have you gotten out of 1,000 impressions? How many people, and comment, you know, comments
mm-hmm.
are the easiest, most direct way to figure out what the consumer feels like. You know what I'm saying? So we look at a bunch of other things, but, like, that's the easiest way to really know how they feel about your music.
And you said something as well it made me think, like, going back to the, like, YouTube, how everybody wants the views, right?
Yep.
It is important to have the views, but is it vital to have it? Or, like, what's another way to get, like, others' attention?
Right.
Let's just use YouTube as a platform.
I'm glad you asked that question, right? Because the views can be considered as a vanity metric. Oh, we got 1 million views on your video. Okay, but were they from real users?
Yeah.
And if they were they from, let's say you're a rapper in New York, were they from this area, or at least from the U.S., or were they from, I don't know, India?
Yeah.
So, right, so the way we market is that the views are a byproduct of focusing on certain parameters. This is what I focus on. If we run an ad on YouTube, let's say we make your entire music video into an ad. On the back end, I can see how many regular YouTube users are adding that song to their playlist. We can see how many earned views occur from that, meaning that if somebody sees your ad and you've caught their attention, they went out of the way to watch that ad, but then they went to your YouTube channel and watched other videos. YouTube tracks that for you when you run ads. So I'm looking at that. I'm looking at how many subscribers are generated from that ad. What else do we look at? We look at playlist ads, subscribers, earned views. And then the viewership rate. So if I put the ad in front of you, that most users only watch it for 15% of the video, you know, so if it's 4 minutes, what's 15% is like under a minute.
Yeah.
Or is it 60%? That means you got their attention. So if we crush it on those metrics, a shit ton of views will just happen.
Gotcha.
That's the byproduct.
Okay.
You know.
Now, is there such thing as, because let's go into the whole social media just overall, right? Is there a such thing as good and bad content? Does it matter?
Yes. I think, you know, they say, like, bad publicity is good publicity, and then that's bullshit.
Okay.
Because, I mean, imagine what happened to, like, R. Kelly, right? I mean, that's an A-list artist, but, like, you don't want to be known as, you know, sexual abuser or, you know, like people say, well, he blew up because he got locked up for a murder case and all that. Well, unfortunately, in certain genres, things like that could be appealing to the kids, to the youngins, to do that. But really, at the end of the day, would you rather have that or would you, you know, like J. Cole is one of the biggest hip hop artists in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Does he have to go into the industry with negative shit happening? No. So is bad content can hurt somebody's career, and especially, in my opinion, as if you're an artist or an actor, because the only reason you're out there is based on how you're perceived by your fans.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're developing an iPhone, and it's a dope-ass technology product, and you're selling a million units. If one of the executives from Apple did something horrible, it may not even affect the iPhone sales, because the consumer would be like, well, they were stupid, but I'm still going to buy the iPhone. And they replaced them. But if you're an artist, that's your brand and you are the product. So, yeah, I think that bad content is not good for longevity.
Yes, and that's what I was wondering, because, okay, like, how is this getting so many views? And right. I don't, you know, but maybe it's just the consumers nowadays, how, you know, what they're looking for.
And look, certain audiences glamorize certain things, right? Uh-huh. I always wondered, as a foreign white kid coming to America, like, initially I'm like, well, why do kids idolize, like, you know, negative things happening to people, like going to jail or, you know, being shot at or the crime or the drug deal and all of that. But somehow, I guess when you're a little kid and you don't have to really deal with that reality, maybe you idolize it. For some other kids, because they come from the same neighborhoods, it's like they idolize it in a different way because they say, okay, this is a way I could potentially make it out and, you know, kind of legitimize things afterwards and never look back and things like that. But I think it's just the audience, like, maturity and who you're marketing to. Because I made a video on, like, why do labels like to get young artists? Because at the end of the day, the most money spenders in the music game are 13 to 25-year-olds.
Okay.
You know, because they live and breathe. Like, think about it when we're in high school, right? Like, as a kid, besides maybe a part-time job and going to school, you have all the time in the world to be a super fan of an artist. Like, I'm the biggest fan of Tupac. Okay. And when I was in high school, man, I read every interview that came out, every unreleased song after his death. Like, I was infatuated with his brand, everything.
Okay.
I spent mad hours interacting with that brand. But when you become an adult, and I like to say when, you know, life punches you in the face, you got kids, responsibilities, all that, you're still a fan of music, but you don't spend as much time interacting with that product.
Okay.
You know, and that's why they say they exploit kids and all that. I think it all plays into it, you know what I'm saying? It's like, why do tobacco companies target young kids to get them hooked? Because they're more easy bamboozled.
Yeah, it's easier to manipulate, you know?
Yeah. So that way, you know, an adult looking at that content, you know how our parents are. Like, my parents are like, what the fuck are you listening to when I was young? Just like their parents were probably like, what the fuck are you listening to? Whatever they're listening to. Then you grow up, and I may see the, you know, like when I look at some of these like 16-year-old artists and whatever, me being older and, you know, planning to have a child as well and things like that, I'm looking from a different lens than when I was 13, 14, you know, 16-year-old kid street racing, trying to get in all the baddest shit just because it was cool to the girls and things like that. It's like, I feel like you mature. So it depends on what audience you're going after, you know?
Speaking of labels, right, is it, I guess I want to know your opinion on, like, is it worth going to a label? Because I know certain artists are very much against it, which I understand why. Like, if you, again, we know the fact of how certain labels took advantage, right? But is it still worth trying to get signed by a label?
I don't think it is.
Okay.
But I also don't want to badmouth the labels, because if you find the right label and the right deal, it could be lucrative. And I think you have to be self-aware as an artist or that team and say, do we want to wear all these hats and build the business? Or do we want to get the artists out there enough to where we can get a decent deal or a partnership? and do it that way. But I also feel like in many ways, it's just these buzzwords. You got to be independent on your masters.
Okay.
But as artists, what does it mean to you on the masters? Well, I own the music. Okay, but what if you don't sell none of it? Then you own 100% of nothing.
Yeah.
Would you trade maybe for 3 years of a label putting some money behind you, exploding you to get you to the next level and then being independent? But the only way you could do that is if while the label is putting all this money behind you, and let's say they got you locked in for 5 years realistically, and you're a 20-year-old, you know, artist, by the time you're 25, you could be a free agent. But are you going to soak up all that business game?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be the Jay-Z, you know, when you were younger, or the Nas, that now is, you know, investor, venture capitalist and things? Because you could see that in certain artists, they became, even Beyonce, you know, they're moguls because they wanted, they enjoyed the business aspect of it. But for the artists that refuse and like, nah, I got the lawyers will take care of that. You know, those are usually the ones that then you see on the VH1 a story like what happened to such and such.
Yeah.
Because they were only cared about going in the booth, writing the lyrics, and making the song, right?
It's true.
So like, if you don't care about nothing else, then how do you expect to succeed in those other aspects? Because now artists are starting to understand that that shit is important. That other 90%.
Listen, it comes down to educating yourself.
That's right.
You understand? And it's like, and this is what frustrates me. Like, I do care for a lot of artists. I'm known to have like that. Like, so I look at them and it's like, oh, you guys frustrate me, but I still have love for you guys. And I understand because I also was an artist and a hip hop artist. So I know what it is to, you know, get bamboozled, all that stuff, right? But I made it my business to learn. And I'm still learning as I'm growing. But what frustrates me is, like, a lot of people, again, you know, like, I'm having these conversations, like, you're here, you're not into investing within yourself, within your brand, right? But then you're expecting to drop this EP, let's just say, and then you expect it to hit, like you said, A-lister, like, bracket. I know a certain artist, they're like, they don't want to invest, but then they're like, oh, I'm going to get the Grammys.
Right.
How? I'm just like, how are you doing this when you're not seeking to invest or you're not even educating yourself?
Right. I agree. And I think it's in any business, that's the beautiful, and I guess, well, no, it's the beautiful thing once you realize that, right? Because I've had this question, I forgot who asked me that on a different interview. Like, it was like a deep question. Like, why do you think that there's always this, like, divide in modern countries and capitalistic countries, Western Europe and here, where it's like 10% of people are succeeding massively and the other 90% are like living paycheck to paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really into psychology for the last 5 years, just reading books about how like people think and, you know, how to market to people and things like that. And it just goes into that self-drive, that self-willingness to educate yourself. And the reason 90% of people will end up being a 90% bracket and only 10% will succeed is because they don't take no for an answer. Like, they have this drive. It's like, I will figure this shit out. I will invest into myself, not just education, into health, and not just learn, but also put in action.
Mm-hmm.
And the other 90% are sort of like, well, you know, maybe this will happen for me, or one day this will happen, and they don't have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one thing. Like, do you have a goal? Is your shit written out? Not like a dream, like, I want to be on the billboards, go to Grammys one day. Okay, how are you going to go to your city Grammys? Let's say there's a talent show in the city. How are you going to do that first?
No, true.
You know? Okay, then can you do it on the state level? Can you then take over your coast? Not if you could do all those three, like, realistically, and make it, then you could probably be at the Grammys, you know what I mean? But it's that, like, the drive. Like, some people just will do it and some people don't. You know, I think education system has a lot to do with it. Like, people are taught, you got to go to school, get a job, this and that. But I think more and more people are starting to realize, like, okay, that'll give me a certain lifestyle, but that's not going to make me glamorous and all that. And going back to social media, it's unfortunate, but a lot of people just believe it's easier. They all want to be celebrities and have these lifestyles. Yeah, the perception. But they don't know what struggles those people have. And, you know, they just want this thing, and it's so far from them, they don't know how to achieve it. So, like, you got to spend the nights, you know, instead of watching Netflix. Study and then put in work, and you're going to have to sacrifice those nights. Don't go out with your friends. That was difficult in my
20s. I could imagine.
My boy, yo, come out with us. We're going to the bar. Nope, I'm building the business over here. It was hard looking back at it, but luckily I had good friends that my friends stayed up with me.
Okay.
And we might have, you know, drank a few beers, maybe smoke a little on a Saturday night, but we were creating plans and, like, you know, deep in the Google Sheets and running the numbers and figuring out what we're going to do on Monday. So it's important to, you know, it's always good to have that, like, ride or die, like, you know, business partner or friend. That certainly helps to have people dedicated around you, because that just drives everybody. But
That's dope.
I just feel like it's within you, and it could change. You can learn how to switch that, I feel like.
You mentioned books, right? I love reading, right? Mm-hmm. So what's a book that you would suggest, like, for myself within marketing to others, like marketing myself to others?
Marketing yourself to others. Actually, let me pull out my app. Let me pull out my Audible, because I can give you a few. So I don't know if you know who Ray Dalio is. He's a New Yorker. He's a billionaire hedge fund owner of, forgot what hedge fund, but there's a book called Principles by Ray Dalio.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's about marketing. It's just for entrepreneurs, period. I think it's a book that you got to read, but let me tell you a few. Honestly, Empire State of Mind, which is about Jay-Z, tells his whole career.
Okay.
I learned a lot about how they, you know, really marketed. 50 Cent's book.
Okay.
Right, being in this industry, and, like, his newest book, which was, I got it right here, like, Hustle Harder. The Formula.
I've heard of The Formula. Yeah.
Is good marketing. Hitmakers, specifically for music. Made to Stick. There's a good one, Contagious. That's the one Nipsey Hussle talked about.
Yeah.
That's a dope book. How Music Works by David Byrne. The Perfect Day to Boss Up, Rick Ross's book that just came out on Audible. That's super dope. Like, he's really transparent about a lot of things that he did and how he got to it. But, yeah, whatever the
50s. Do you read a lot, or do you do a lot of, is it audiobooks? Or
all
is
audio.
Like, yeah?
Yeah. I used to hate reading. Like, the physical aspect of just holding the book.
Okay.
It's all audible.
Gotcha.
Certain books I'll end up buying, because, like, especially about business, if you're looking at PDFs and all that, you kind of just have to see it in the book or in the PDF, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's all something. When I was, like, 27, Hustle Harder, Hustle Smarter. Like, I gave it to 50 Cent. Is like, he's a great businessman for a reason,
he talks about why. He's very, I think recently was it Snoop Dogg who mentioned, like, how he's, like, a big inspiration.
Yeah.
Just, like, on everything he's doing, you know, and it's super dope for, like, just having his background to where he's at now, you know, it is motivating, because it's the whole story. If, you know, if he can do it and he was just consistent, and, you know, then I can do it. But it's, again, like you mentioned, mindset, you know, it's having that mindset, shifting the mind, turning, you know, putting the action behind it and everything like that, you know, so.
And you know what they say, which resonates with me, is fail as fast as possible, as often as possible in business. Because if you look at that fail as a lesson, it's just iteration of learning. Like, oh, this didn't work, that didn't work. Okay. Have a goal, because you got to have, like, an outcome that you're trying to reach. But it's like, you're going to fail a bunch of times. And nobody talks about it. And that's the thing about the music industry, just so glamorous, entertain. Like, that's what people have to understand. It's entertainment.
Yeah.
So when you hear these artists talk, this is what I learned, like, from executives at the label. When an artist gets on the podcast after they, you know, made it or whatever, and they're like, yeah, man, we just fucking put a song out on SoundCloud and it kind of just went viral and things like that. Like, the publicists literally tell them to say stuff like that, because in the music industry, if you can look like this, like, just anomaly, you're just so talented and you were so dope that you just put the song out and just people can get enough of it, it's a much better story.
Yeah.
But nobody talks about the back end work and all that was happening, and this happens all the time. You know,
and I think that's what, and you're right about that. And I think this is why, again, like, a lot of these up and coming artists,
they're looking for
that. Yeah, yeah, they're hearing it, and they're looking for. You notice a lot of artists, they're in a place that they just want to become viral.
Yeah,
and not only artists, just like influencers, or you know, the key word is viral. I'm just like, okay, it's dope to be viral, yes, but what's the long term of it?
Yep.
Are you going to be consistent with being viral? You know, are you, you know, et cetera, you know? And it's like, so it makes a lot of sense for them to do so, because it's, again, the way they're manipulating the up and coming.
Yep. And you know what? Another thing that this was Lil Yachty said that on Clinton Sparks' podcast. Clinton was asking him, he was like, what do you think was the hardest thing for you in the industry? And he was like, it definitely wasn't, like, making it or going viral, so to speak, or, you know, getting attention of the label and them taking it. It was sustaining that. Is once they went viral once, he was like, for me to have to do it again. And, like, how do you either top that or at least bring it on a consistent basis over and over and over again to continue to feed that fan base, that attention. Mm. You know, because if you don't do it, somebody else is going to take their attention. And that's real, because I've had those successes and losses in business. You know, I almost gave up on business in 2016, just to be fully transparent. We had to shut down my company, Greenew It. The administration change, it went from Obama to Trump. And thanks to Obama's administration, their willingness to basically seed and fund energy efficiency in the East Coast, that helped us develop our company. Once that was taken away, it was much more difficult. So then we had to shut the company down.
Okay.
And basically, you know, it was a losing financial situation at that point. And I had a choice to make. I was like, am I going to get a 9-to-5? Because two of my business partners kind of slightly went in that direction. One of them found his way back to entrepreneurship. Other one, you know, has a 9-to-5. But it was difficult because I'm like, what was it, like 31 years old, okay. 32? I'm like, fuck, like my mom's putting, a little bit of pressure, not in a negative way, but, you know, that family pressure, like, well, then what are you going to do next? You need to make a living. You know, are you going to get married? Are you going to buy a house? Like, well, yeah, what's going to happen? Yeah. And I'm just, it was a depressive time, right? Mm. Financially, it was tight. I had a lot of savings, but like I couldn't talk to my friends and family because they weren't entrepreneurs. And I didn't have that guidance. So I found the guidance in books. I became immersed into reading about successes and losses and failures of other entrepreneurs. And the more I was listening to it, I'm like, yo, I've learned so much in the last 8 years of how to literally create a company from nothing to 60 plus employees, where we did like $6 million a year in revenue almost for 2 years straight. I was like, I'm not going to throw this away. I'm going to apply all that knowledge. And yes, it's going to be scary. I even was driving Uber and Lyft for like a year. All that money I made there went straight to marketing, like this brand and all that. But I took that risk, and even my family was like, well, you know, what are you going to do? I'm like, just give me 2 years. If this none of this shit works out, I will go and get a job. One thing that made me feel good is that I was offered a job at AARP. It was like an entrepreneur-in-chief in-house for $150,000. I didn't have a resume, nothing, just off of my LinkedIn profile.
Oh, wow.
They were like, you know, $150 a year, 9-to-5 and all that. So tempting. I was like, I can't do it. I got to give myself 2 more years because of all that learning I've done. I cannot miss out on that. And then, man, I'm so glad I took that risk.
That's dope. You know, okay.
And where I got the guts to do it is from reading about the entrepreneurs that were in very similar situations and understanding how they got through it. It empowered me.
Okay.
But like I said, if I didn't get it from those, listening to those books and hearing those stories, I don't know where else I would have got it from around the, you know, from the people that were around me. Because none of them ever experienced that. You know what I mean?
Hearing you go through this route and understanding that you just did not quit, you know, I'm sure it was hard. Did you, like, I guess my question I want to know is that, did you fall into a depression with this?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, how long, I mean, you said 2 years you gave yourself, but in reality, how long did it really take you to actually, like, get yourself out of this depression and get to this whole, all right, snap out of it?
Year and a half.
Okay.
You know, after the whole fallout, which was also a fallout between my business partners, one of them who we rekindled our relationship, and this has been my best friend since middle school, so that was tough. You know, I used to, like, smoke cigarettes when I was in high school, quit them when I was 23. I'm, like, 31. I'm, like, starting to smoke black camels again. I'm like, what am I, you know, it's just...
Yikes.
A lot of
that's
stuff,
harsh.
You know what I'm saying? So that, driving Uber, just feeling isolated, like feeling sort of embarrassed, you know, in front of, like, because they knew our trajectory, where we were going with Greenew It and things like that. So it was definitely tough.
Okay.
But I just kind of stayed tunnel vision.
Gotcha.
And I was exercising as well. That helps, you know. It's not just, like, the knowledge, but, like you were saying, like, body, mind, soul, all of that. So I was running a lot, despite smoking black and mild. That's why I was like, this is stupid. Like, I'm smoking every day. Again, it was like a 9-month period. But I'm running, and I'm trying to exercise, which helps. And there's a lot of conflicting things. You know, couldn't sleep well at night. I literally, just being fully transparent, I developed anxiety for the first... I don't know what was wrong with me. I would have, like, neck pains. And I thought, like, I was about to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
And luckily, it ended up being anxiety. Like, in my early 30s, never had that before in my life. So it was a lot of stuff that I had to get through.
I could imagine.
And looking back, you know, even that, like, I don't know what was going on. So I started listening to books. Like, how do I battle this? Because, of course, the industry wants to pump you up full of medicine and all that. You know, and look, I love science. I understand it. So I even tried to hear, you know, a few medication here and there, but I'm like, no, this shit is bullshit. Yeah. So again, through understanding what I was dealing with and how to improve, how to exercise better, eat better, all that, I like figured it out.
A great book that I would suggest, I'm not sure if you read it or not, I speak on this book very much, would be Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. Check that out.
Napoleon Hill.
Yeah. That was like the back end of that book. Like, for them to actually put the book out, it was just such a long process because his family, they were at a place where they didn't want to put it out in like in the 40s.
Right.
Because they felt like, you know, where they come from and everything, they didn't want people to judge Napoleon and look at him as if he was crazy. Because, like, the first half of the book is him speaking on his, like, how he lost his company, gained it back, like, just his ups and downs, right? Then eventually, because of everything he went through, it was just, like, a big, like, a spiritual awakening where he literally has an interview with the devil. So now he's, like, getting into, like, religion, spirituality, cigarettes. Like, he just dives into so much. And it was just such a powerful book. And I tell people, like, you know, read it. Check it out. The audio is super dope. Yeah. I prefer the audio over the book.
Sure. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, definitely, you know.
Napoleon Hill. What's the book name?
Outwitting the Devil.
Okay. Let me do Napoleon Hill.
On that.
Yeah, you know. And, like, you have to, I feel like, go through some of those, like, ups and downs. That's the thing about most people that actually make it, and once you understand their stories, is they all went through that.
Yeah.
It's incredibly rare that somebody just, like, late teens, has an awesome family, no issues, becomes an actor or a singer or a, you know, brainiac app developer, software developer, and just has a beautiful, and everything just goes smoothly, and it just, everything falls in line, starts happening.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's super, super, super rare.
No, no, it's that vision. You have to know your why.
Yeah.
Know your why. And I tell people this, like, know your why. If you don't, you know, and it's okay to come back to your why and, you know, like, figure it out, you know, like, get back to it, you know, because you have your moments where you lose your why, you know, like, it's happened to me, so... Just, you know, for anyone, you know, just at the end of the day, just continue, you know, you have to, it's okay, like you mentioned, appreciate the failures of it, you know, and you have to, it's okay to fall, I tell people, it's just the getting back up.
Yep. And consistency is key, and I never delete a post of my Instagram, because I kind of want that story to be there, hopefully it never gets shut down for whatever reason, but late 2017, early 2018, when I started my Instagram page with this, like, music entrepreneurship educational aspect, at the end of 2017, I was still going through some of these, like, personal struggles. So many days I didn't want to put out a video.
Oh, wow.
But I did it every day. And it actually made me feel better, because getting some of those, like, praises and comments of people appreciating what I was saying, sometimes just those comments alone got me through some of those days.
Gotcha.
Even though I was not getting paid anything for it, and in fact, I'm dumping money into it, because every time I put a post out, I'm also boosting it and, like, advertising it.
Okay.
So it wasn't just, like, hoping people would, like, you know, start listening to me and resonating. So it was like, you know, I'm financially in the hole every day.
Okay.
I'm putting it in there, and just sometimes just that one good comment or a couple good comments just made it feel like, all right, this is going the right direction. And from everything I'm reading, like, I'm going to have to do this shit for another 2 years to 3 years.
Okay.
You know, and being able to experience that in my other businesses, that it did take usually 3 years for the other companies that made us money for the founders to start being able to pay themselves. I knew that I was like, okay, it's going to be another 3 year journey.
Okay.
And it roughly, this time around, it was a year and like 8 months.
Oh, wow.
But that's probably because this was my like seventh time doing it.
Wow.
You know?
Question, because I've been told, like, start doing videos, right? And I do here and there, but I guess for me, I want to know. I know the answer, but I guess to hear it, it's like, for me, like, how did you, I guess, gain the confidence in just with your videos? Was it just like you was just like, fuck it, I'm gonna just do a video and see how it goes, and you continue, or, you know, like, how did that happen?
Because
for me, I get, it's crazy, as much as I do all this, when it comes to, like, doing a video for, like, speaking on certain topics, I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I'll do it another day.
Then. Well, we'll start taking snippets out of these, okay. Putting that on, like, as 1 minute, 45-second snippets of people you talk to, see how people resonate. Because once they, like, oh, that's dope. Yeah, I agree with what you said and all that. Just gives you the courage to do it. Mm. But in my case, I'm glad you asked that because I'm definitely more of an introvert, believe it or not. And English is my third language. Mm-hmm. And when I got into YouTube in 2011... I always had fear of public speaking and all of that. And even with my old business partners, I would get the feedback sometimes that, you know, look, let us do the talking because of, you know, the way I would say the sentences sometimes in English. It just sometimes I would ask questions that maybe didn't make 100% sense. So that was some of the feedback in my early business days. And it kind of held me back a little bit. But what I did on YouTube, because I was super passionate about technology and like jailbreaking iPhones and rooting Androids and things like that. I was always into that tech aspect. I started a channel called Tech Vitamins.
Okay.
On YouTube in 2011. And it wasn't me and my face talking. It would just be me reviewing the camera I was facing on the phone. So at most you could see my hands. Mm. And I'm doing reviews on the newest phone and things like that. A lot of time I'm just freestyling it. I have like an outline of what I want to talk about. Mm. I watch a lot of videos of others talking. And I would talk about other stuff that I didn't hear mentioned in the other videos. And again, consistency. Every week I'm putting a new video out and all that, and people started commenting like, bro, we love the information, mm. this and that. And nobody ever said in the early videos that I said a lot, or I would pause, or maybe I felt like I went off a tangent here and there and things like that. So I'm like, shit, this is working. So I did that for a couple of years. I learned how the YouTube algorithm worked. That channel still makes money to this day.
Oh, wow.
I haven't made a video since 2013. But B, I got more comfortable with understanding that what I have to sort of give out there, even though it's not perfect, it's not scripted, I'm not on CNN reading off a teleprompter, people appreciate it.
Mm, okay.
So then when it came to the music industry, it was much easier to do it. But still, I was not like front-facing, you know, so I just kind of had to do it and did a few of them. Luckily, feedback was good.
Okay.
And I kept going. Honestly, I don't know how I would have taken it if people were like, man, you fucking suck. Like, what'd you say? Like, that's some trash and all that. And look, every once in a while, people will say that because they're just, they got some, you know, bad going on in their life. But it worked out. But another thing I did about public speaking is that I used to hate getting in front of like accepting awards from my other company, tech awards and things like that. So when I entered the music industry, I needed to live off my studio because my entire basement was a studio, and that was also another way I made money besides the Uber and Lyft. I was engineering and recording artists, but I needed to get more business for the studio. So I wasn't expert at the ads just yet back then. But what I did, I would go to open mic nights.
Okay.
And instead of getting on stage for my 5 minutes and doing a spoken word or like, you know, singing or rapping, I would first talk to the, you know, the open mic night, whatever owner or the guy that was running it. And I was like, can I talk 5 minutes about the music industry? Mm. Now get on stage and I'll just start pointing at artists and be like, all right, so I know you guys, I heard some dope music tonight. How you plan on marketing that? Like you specifically, because that song was dope. What are you doing to market this? Crickets. I'm like, well, have you thought about doing ads on YouTube or have you thought about doing this? Or, you know, maybe like I heard that song, but you guys don't even have a performance track. Do you know, have a studio and things like that? So the two things, it helped me get business, but I got much more comfortable speaking in front of a crowd of 25, 50, in some cases 75. And I felt like since there were artists and managers, there was more on my level as opposed to speaking in front of like C-level executives and all that.
Mm.
But that definitely helped a lot. And I forced myself to do it because I probably read it in the book or listened to it in the book somewhere. And, you know, people say all the time, like, you got to face your fears. So I was like, all right, where can I go? Shit, open mic nights, because I was going with my artists all the time.
And that's so weird, because I'm constantly doing events. Like, I'm going to give it a try. I will give it a try, and that's dope. And, like, that's super dope how you would go to open mics in just those 5 minutes. Like, that's dope.
Yeah, talking about music business.
That was really smart of you. And then so when you did that, would you have, like, somebody come in and just grab content for you, or it was just basically a start off and then eventually you went to just doing the videos?
Yeah, I wish I would have. I have a few videos. Even if you go back on my Instagram, back to like late 2017, early 2018, there's a few videos of me like that. Like there was a big show and then I get on stage.
Okay.
You know, and like I said, usually I made the relationship with the open mic person that was running it so they would introduce me and give me some, you know, credibility. and then I would just talk.
That's dope. You know?
And a lot of times I wouldn't get any responses because it was like weird for the artist to be like, well, he's you know, asking dope questions, but like maybe I don't want to say nothing. But what then happened is after the open mic, that's when people started coming up to me. Like, yo, but you said really, like, so you do this, you can maybe help me do X, Y, and Z, or, you know, you got a studio, you said? Like, yeah, I definitely need a, like, a dope spot to record at. I need a good engineer, you know, so.
That's dope. That's really, really smart. I like that. That was very smart of you. That's super dope. So, I know, lastly, I definitely want to ask you, this is one of my infamous questions. When was the last time you did something for the first time?
Well, a year and a half ago, in December, I proposed.
Oh, congratulations. To my fiance,
yeah. So that was the first time I ever did that.
That's dope.
What else recently? I did a TEDx talk in 2019, just did another one. So that was the first time I did something on that platform, which was nerve-wracking, even though I had all this practice in front of, like, you know, crowds and open mic nights.
How did you prepare for that?
I went back to my third grade days with my mom. I just studied. I wrote the whole thing out, make sure I wasn't going to go over 17 minutes. And you could watch that, and I did it. I'm mad at myself for the second one. Mm-hmm. Everybody clapped, and I probably may have even done a better job.
Okay.
But I didn't memorize it word for word. But okay. I knew the topic very well, so I think I did okay. But I feel like the first one, even though I was like, it was nerve-wracking, I did a better job from just knowing it. But that's how I did. I just memorized the shit out of it and had to, like, pump myself, you know, to do it. Got it done, and I definitely practiced. My fiance with me, I probably recited that talk to her like 17 to 25 times.
I could imagine. So, that's dope, though. Congratulations on both. With I love is love. Love is a beautiful thing. So, you know, shout out to the fiance. Yep. You know, shout out to you that everything you're doing. Now, when, let's just say, you know, for an artist or an influencer, they want to reach out to you. You know, for example, I reached out to you out of just social media.
Yep.
But if they want to learn more or just like work with you, is it simple? Like, it's just simply just reach out to your social media, or is there like a form they have to fill out? Like, how is that process?
So you can go to my Instagram page, Matei_age_entrepreneur. And DM me, because at this point I have a team and my assistant goes through my DMs all the time. So okay. If people approach me the right way, like you did, by the way.
Thank you.
That was put on my radar. I'm like, okay, let me respond to this one. Because trust me, I get a bunch of stupid DMs every day.
I can imagine.
You can also fill out a form on digitalsciencemedia.com. That's okay. My marketing agency.
Okay.
So you go to the website. You can look at some case studies. You can look at our services and all that. And there's a, you know, page where you can say start a campaign or ask more questions, and you can fill that out. And again, that's also a good way to do it, because my assistant and my team looks at that and they will alert me if it's, again, properly submitted and you say the right things. On my Instagram, there's also a phone number that you can text me on. Mm-hmm. So it does go to my phone, but it's an app that any artist or even you could be using called Superphone. Community is another one. It's like a MailChimp for emails. This is for text, but you can get a hold of me that way. My team again checks that.
Okay.
And that's also the phone number that we use to give alerts to our Indie Artist Accelerator members that, you know, I'm going live for a Q&A for all the members on Tuesdays and Saturdays and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Instagram pages, hit that link in the bio, and then there's, you know, ways to get in touch.
Do you solely just work with artists, or like, I know you mentioned producers, but outside of that, do you work with YouTubers or like podcasters, anything like that? Like
entertainment, yes.
Okay.
Podcaster fits that mold. YouTubers does as well, but I am niched down to the entertainment and music, you know.
Okay.
And I feel like that's also for anybody that's listening. You want to hire a marketing agency, unless you're hiring like Gary Vee's marketing agency, where he's got 3,000 employees and every industry sector has their own team. Like, don't work with those marketing agencies that say they can market anybody. Because it's one thing to understand how to put together ads and all that, but, like, I don't market to the law industry lawyers or medical doctors and things like that, because, like, you have to understand the consumer as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to stick in the music industry. So, you know, niching down, that's something I learned, you know, over my years. Like, it's better to focus on one particular thing or one lane or one industry first, perfect that, and then take it on. But, you know, we focus on entertainment. So podcast is good, music, producer, labels, you know. But I turn down a ton of business every week.
That's what I was going to ask you next. Like, how do you go about selecting the ones that you're going to work with?
So I always prefer that the artist has a manager.
Okay.
Somebody that understands the business.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
We do work with artists individually, and they got to have the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to have music out.
Okay.
I even tell people, look, come back in 2 months, but make sure that when you come to us, you have at least 2 to 4 songs out. I'm talking about everywhere. Spotify and all that. Like, don't come to me and, like, I only got songs on SoundCloud and all that, because once we turn it on and start marketing for you, why would you want to create a barrier for your consumer to find you? If they're going to like the ad the very first time we run it on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, whatever, and they want the song, make sure it's fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows how to get on Spotify, YouTube, or, you know what I'm saying, Apple Music, because they already probably have it. So, mm-hmm. You know, so there are certain characteristics we look for. So I don't work with just anybody.
Okay.
You know, and the budget's got, I hate wasting people's time. Like, every week I only got $500. I only got $750. I can't really do anything for you.
Yeah.
But such and such will do. I'm like, go ahead and get burned. But I explained to them, like, look, man, if anybody tells you they can do something substantial, $500, just think about it. Like, how are they going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they make $10 an hour, which most people don't want to make that little.
Mm-hmm.
That means they're putting in 50 hours of their time into you, right? And then where's the budget coming from for running ads? So I try to make them realize, like, really think about what you're paying for, because there's a ton of websites that will take your $500 and claim they're going to get you, and they will get you 4,000 views on your YouTube, but it's bots.
Mm-hmm.
Because it costs $50 to get 10,000 views that are not real on a YouTube video.
No, that's a fact. You know, that's definitely
so,
a
yeah,
fact.
So we don't just take anybody, but, you know, I try to help out most people. Even if I think, look, I've been proven wrong in terms of what songs sound like, right? Like, again, I tell people, I'll give you my opinion on a song, but I've worked with some artists that I would never catch me listening to that shit in my car or anything like that. I'm not a fan. But once we put in front of the right audience, it worked.
Super dope. I just wanted to say, you know, thank you again, you know, for being here, taking the time, speaking with us. I definitely will, you know, would love to bring you back, you know, and speak more on other topics. But
appreciate you for having me.
I mean, of course.
It means a lot. And again, you can find me on Instagram. It's Matej, M-A-T-E-J _H, which is my last name initial, Harangozo, but it's _H_entrepreneur. And then if you hit the link in the bio, you can find everything. But Digital Science Media, because my name is hard as shit to pronounce and remember. So Digital Science, like beakers and shit, science, media.com.
Okay.
That's the website.
And again, like I mentioned, all his information is going to be in the description box below. So all you have to do is click on it. Yeah. Again, I just want to say thank you for everything. Thank you to you guys who've been liking, commenting, all that good stuff. It's your girl, V Henny, The Artistry. You can follow us, V_Henny_ The Artistry Show everywhere. And we out, guys. You already know the vibes. Rock out with your cocks out. Jam out with your clam out.
The Artistry.
Catch us on YouTube, Facebook, or outlets.
Follow us.